I was approximately 18 years old and had found myself homeless. I didn't have any friends where I could couch hop per se, so yeah, I was unfortunately literally on the streets at that time.
Love does not discriminate, never chooses sides.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Austria proposes civil partnerships, homeless queer youth seek open hearts and safe shelter, and new music from Mika Wishingshire and Nick Granato tunes up the audiophile. All that and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Taryn James.
And I'm Rick Watts.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending November 21st, 2009. Austria's coalition government this week announced that it would introduce legislation to create civil partnerships for same-gender couples. While they would not be equivalent to heterosexual marriage, benefits would include social security, pension, and inheritance rights. The proposed bill reportedly resulted from several weeks of difficult negotiations between the ruling Social Democrats and their conservative People's Party coalition partner. The compromise legislation restates Austria's ban on adoption by same-gender couples and on lesbian couples' access to artificial insemination services. Gay and lesbian couples would also not be able to hold ceremonies at civil registry offices, as heterosexual couples can do. They would simply register their relationship at a municipal or magistrate's office. Nevertheless, Roman Catholic Church officials have condemned the legislation as unnecessary. It's still expected to pass in Parliament before the end of the year and take effect on January 1st. Jonas Solomon of the rights group Hosi Ven called the civil partnerships a first step into the future, but said that lesbi-gay activists would continue to push for full marriage equality. Others complained that the law would formalize a second-class status for same-gender couples.
Lesbian and gay couples were in several U.S. courts this week. A federal court judge ordered the U.S. government to compensate a gay couple in Los Angeles for being denied spousal benefits. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals Judge Stephen Reinhart ruled in February that Tony Sears, the legally married husband of federal public defender Brad Levinson, was wrongfully denied spousal health benefits based on sexual orientation. Discrimination on that basis is banned by both the Ninth Circuit, for which Levinson works, and California law. Reinhart this week ordered the federal government to calculate and pay what it owes the couple for outside health insurance and other medical and dental expenses they've incurred. Citing DOMA, the 1996 Defense of Marriage Act, the U.S. Office of Personnel Management has not yet complied with Reinhart's February ruling. But he wrote this week that the denial of federal benefits to same-sex spouses cannot be justified simply by a distaste for or disapproval of same-sex marriage. There's been no comment to date by federal officials on this week's Ninth Circuit order. A bill authorizing health benefits for the same-gender domestic partners of U.S. government workers was passed by a congressional subcommittee this week.
The Defense of Marriage Act is also being challenged by several married same-gender couples in Massachusetts. They filed court documents this week charging that there is no legitimate or plausible reason for the federal government to deny recognition to legally married lesbian and gay couples. The lawsuit was brought by seven same-gender couples and three widowers, all of whom wed in Massachusetts under the state's 2004 marriage equality law. It claims that DOMA violates the U.S. Constitution's 14th Amendment equal protection provisions because it denies them access to several federal benefits, such as pensions, health insurance, and the ability to file joint tax returns. In a court filing in September, the U.S. Justice Department acknowledged that the Obama administration thinks DOMA is discriminatory and should be repealed. But officials have said that the department has an obligation to defend federal laws when they're challenged in court. It would take an act of Congress or a ruling from the U.S. Supreme Court to overturn DOMA.
The state of New York's highest court, the Court of Appeals, this week upheld the recognition of same-gender marriages legally performed elsewhere. The cases specifically involve the extension of benefits to same-gender partners of government employees who wed out of state. They arose in response to the executive order issued by Governor David Patterson last year to recognize same-gender marriages performed in other places, which include Massachusetts, Connecticut, Vermont, Iowa, and Canada. According to the New York Times, the narrow ruling affects only the plaintiffs and does not resolve the broader issues involving the full recognition of same-gender marriages. As the Times reported, Judge Eugene F. Piggott, Jr., writing for the majority, expressed hope that the legislature will address this controversy. A marriage equality bill passed the New York Assembly earlier this year and awaits action in the state Senate.
Gay and lesbian government workers in Arizona filed suit this week to keep their domestic partner benefits from becoming a casualty of state budgetary woes. Under a bill signed into law by Governor Jan Brewer in September, Arizona would continue to offer health benefits to heterosexual spouses, but no longer provide them to same-gender domestic partners. Lambda Legal, which is representing the couples, called it an issue of equal pay for equal work and said that the stripping of the benefits is simply cruel and saves the state next to nothing.
Elsewhere, officials in the Philippines have refused to recognize a proposed LGBT-based political party. The country's Elections Commission decided that the group Unladlad, which means out of the closet, could not sponsor candidates in next year's elections because it tolerates immorality which offends religious beliefs. The ruling cited passages from the Bible and the Quran that condemn homosexuality. The country's Human Rights Commission voiced its support for Unladlad, calling the Election Commission's decision retrogressive. Unladlad leader Danton Bramoto, a university English professor and high-profile gay activist, filed a petition this week asking the commission to reconsider its ruling. If his group is allowed to run and wins a congressional seat, Bramoto said their focus would be on a proposed anti-discrimination bill that has been languishing for 9 years because of insufficient support. One of the elections commissioners also said this week that gays and lesbians can't be considered marginalized in society because there are already too many of them in the nation's legislature. He declined to name names, however. If the commission upholds the rejection, Unladlad can bring the case to the country's Supreme Court for a final ruling.
But India's Electoral Commission has decided to add an option on voter forms for those who see themselves as neither male nor female. Those intersex and transgender people, known as eunuchs or hijras in Indian society, will now be able to check O for other. India already allows people to select E for eunuch on passports and some other government documents.
In other news, the brutal murders of two gender-variant gay teenagers this week inspired vigils and calls for justice around the world. 19-year-old Jorge Steven Lopez Mercado was killed in Puerto Rico. His body was dismembered, partially burned, and left by the side of the road near the city of Calle by a man who thought he was a female prostitute. Attorneys for the 26-year-old suspect, Juan A. Martinez Matos, said they may use a gay panic defense for their client, who is behind bars on first-degree murder charges. LGBT activists held demonstrations across Puerto Rico and in other cities around the world to mourn Lopez Mercado and to demand that his murder also be prosecuted as a hate crime. Vigils were also held this week for 15-year-old Jason Madison Jr., who was found raped, gagged, and stabbed to death in a closet at his aunt's house in Baltimore, Maryland. 35-year-old Dante Parrish, described by the Baltimore Sun as a family friend and ex-con, has been charged with first-degree murder. He'd been released, based on a legal technicality, after serving 10 years in prison for another homicide. While the specific circumstances that led to Madison's murder are not clear, Parrish reportedly confessed and is being held without bail.
Meanwhile, events were held across the globe on November 20th, marking the 11th annual Transgender Day of Remembrance, which memorializes gender-variant people who were killed because of prejudice and hate. Observances, which included religious services, film screenings, marches, and candlelight vigils, were reported in cities across Australia, Canada, the UK, France, Italy, New Zealand, and the US, and in Belarus, Germany, Indonesia, Israel, Kenya, Malaysia, the Netherlands, Norway, the Philippines, Sweden, and Turkey.
And finally, Barbara Ann Radnofsky, a Houston lawyer and Democratic candidate for Texas Attorney General, claims that a 22-word clause in a 2005 constitutional amendment that banned same-gender marriage threatens the legal status of all marriages in the state. The problematic phrase, Radnofsky says, is subsection B, which declares that this state or a political subdivision of this state may not create or recognize any legal status identical or similar to marriage. Authors of the amendment added the clause to include a constitutional ban on same-gender civil unions and domestic partnerships. While Radnofsky acknowledged that her assertion is not likely to result in an overnight annulment of all marriages in Texas, she said the wording opens the door to legal claims involving spousal rights, insurance, inheritance, and a host of other marriage-related issues. Kelly Shackelford, president of the Liberty Legal Institute, which helped draft the amendment, said that any lawsuit based on the wording of subsection B would have about one chance in a trillion of being successful. But, says Radnofsky, whoever vetted the language in B must have been asleep at the wheel.
That's News Wrap for the week ending November 21st, 2009. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. You can read the text of this week's News Wrap online at www.thiswayout.org. For This Way Out, I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Taryn James.
Stand Up 8 for The Boy Who Knew Too Much in Real Life, later in the program. Last time on This Way Out, correspondents Dixie Trichel and John Townsend detailed many of the challenges confronting homeless LGBT youth, which included comments by Minnesota State Senator Scott Dibble.
Young people unaccompanied in the shelters are in highly vulnerable circumstances. LGBTQ youth are highly vulnerable out on the streets. They're coming from a background of rejection, family rejection, rejection by their peers. Many are coming out of small towns, completely alienated and lost once they show up in the big city.
In this week's conclusion of a special two-part feature, we meet Kamar, a formerly homeless gay teen, and Vi, the compassionate man who took him in.
Tell me a little bit about how you met and what you're doing today.
I met Kamar at a host training. I was going to become a host in the host home program for GLBT youth, and Kamar was helping give the training. Kamar was on a youth panel. I was most impressed with the youths who spoke to us and helped us to understand what some of their issues were and what they go through, and Kamar and I had a conversation afterwards, and that sparked a little something, and then eventually we met, and Kamar read my file as a potential host in waiting, and one thing led to another. The match was made.
Kamar, then, how did you come to be involved in the host home program?
I was approximately 18 years old and had currently found myself homeless. There were some difficulties my mother had been having, and that resulted in both of us being out. And while I couldn't continue staying with her where she was at because it wasn't suitable for youth, I continued working and saving money and trying to get an apartment. On the way, I ran into a series of excellent resources, which led me to the host home program. Became a youth in waiting, basically, waiting for a host to open up, which is an adult that will take a youth into their home after trainings. And I got onto the youth panel and discussion board, and that's where I met Vi. We had a wonderful commonality in the things that we were saying at that point in time. And afterwards, yeah, as you said, we talked, and I knew that eventually if a house opened up with him, that's where I was going to be.
Mm-hmm,
and it
mm-hmm.
did work out that way.
Before you got involved in the host home program, did you have places to stay as a homeless person, or were you literally on the streets?
I didn't know anyone in Minnesota. I was originally from California. And so I didn't have any friends where I could couch hop, per se. So yeah, I was unfortunately literally on the streets at that time. There were a lot of open squats downtown. There were a lot of abandoned buildings in the warehouse district that had a lot of easy access for youth such as myself at that time. It's one of the reasons why I do advocate for reusing empty space and for having it open for responsible squatters and people who are willing to make improvements on it while they're staying there.
You're both now involved working with Avenues for Youth. Tell us a little bit about that program and how you're involved today.
Avenues for Youth is a 15-bed transitional shelter. Youths live dorm style in many ways, and home style in other ways. We eat together. They spend a lot of time in the house, either socializing or working towards their finishing school, getting a job or keeping a job, thinking about the next steps for them. We accept youths ages 16 to 21. We have space for transgender youth. Our program is queer-friendly. We try to operate from a social justice, in particular a giving back kind of a model.
Mm-hmm.
I think we appreciate the knowledge and the skills and the gifts that youth have to give to us.
Kumar?
Yes, I was invited to speak a little bit about the host home program for GLBT youth at a fundraiser. Senator Scott Dibble was attending, and it was important to me to be there and to say something in support of host home program. It went very well that evening, and after which I was informed that there was an opening at Avenues for Homeless Youth that I might apply for, which I did, and I now work there as a youth counselor. We let them know immediately whether or not there is an open bed. We also have an emergency bed available for youth who don't have anywhere that very night, and that can be reserved at 7 p.m. and occupied from midnight to 8 a.m. Monday through Friday, and they can use it 3 days a week, and we usually have that filled as well as the 15 beds upstairs.
If you are full, what would be another resource that folks could go to?
We have a lot of networking, and we can provide them with a full list of other shelters and transitional living spaces that are available for them, with a list of ranges in age and gender. We try our best to assist those that we can. Unfortunately, oftentimes, we are not always able to place a youth because we're so full, and so mm-hmm. we find ourselves giving out those other resources. We do need more places for the youth, and we need more options available and more attention on the issue of homelessness, GLBT mm-hmm. youth especially, because of the prejudice they already have to deal with are finding themselves without resources and in need of assistance.
If someone is GLBT questioning, intersex, do you know of any kind of prejudice that they've encountered?
I can speak to that. Right now, my role as a host in the host home program is as providing temporary emergency housing. So a youth will stay with me for a month to 6 weeks until we can find them a more permanent placement. I had a youth stay with me who had been at one of the adult shelters. He's mm-hmm. 18. He's gay. And some of the problems that he encountered were related to his sexuality. He had to really hide the fact that he's gay. Mm-hmm. He worried when he saw people that knew that he might get jumped there or sexually assaulted. There was some history of that occurring at these various shelters that he had stayed at. It didn't happen to him. Other things are shelter workers sometimes have biases and prejudices towards gay, lesbian, bi, and transgender and intersex folks, and will sometimes actively antagonize queer and trans and intersex folks mm-hmm. who come to the shelter.
Oftentimes it's the case when apparent transgender youth comes into a facility, meaning perhaps they aren't fully in sync with the gender that they identify as, and it's visible to those who look at them. They find themselves singled out. There are some emergency beds and shelters where youths are sent if there's a problem to allow them to cool down. And when you immediately send a youth there, when they haven't done anything but come into your facility for assistance, all the other youth in the facility look to see what is the problem. That is the problem room. Why is that? Oh, look mm-hmm. at that person. And the gossip commences, and it's horribly unfortunate, and it's even worse when staff participate in it or try to dissuade the youth from their identity and their life as they know it to be true.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there is a sharp difference between providing a youth with the needs that they require and trying to impose your personal views and beliefs upon them. That is not your job. GLBT people who aren't even a parent because they have to hear comments and they have to decide whether or not to be themselves or to sequester mm-hmm. themselves. Mm-hmm. And that's not a choice anyone should have to make when they're worrying about where they're going to lay their head that night.
Liberation comes before assimilation. I think a young person needs to have a safe place to be with people who have a healthy grounding and will support and enable a young person to come into their own.
We really are trying to expand that and get more GLBT adults who are capable of volunteering and have the space and the heart. GLBT adults who have the space and the time have a unique experience that enables them to relate to the GLBT youth mm-hmm. that are currently in need, because they have known what it is to combat injustice. They've known what it is to make the choice between assimilation or individuality.
I have had 3 young people in my home just in the last year. Being a host and being a part of a mutually supportive cross-generational relationship has really been rich for me. It really empowers our community as a whole to have these connections being made for young GLBT people to have safe older GLBT folks.
Our thanks to Vi and Kamar and correspondents Dixie Trichel and John Townsend for turning a much-needed spotlight on the urgent care needs of homeless LGBT youth. Much more obviously needs to be done to literally save our children.
Extra, extra, read all about it, extra!
A new This Way Out update has been posted on our website. For recent programming information and behind-the-scenes news about your favorite international LGBT radio show, log on to www.thiswayout.org.
In this month's audio file, the second album from a bisexual British singer offers no apologies. The eighth offering from an enduring lesbian duo is named for a Japanese proverb, and a gay Florida-based vocalist wants his latest CD to inspire hope and perseverance.
Teenage dreams in a teenage circus, running around like a clown on purpose. Who gives a damn about the family you come from? No giving up when you're young and you want some. Running around again, running around again, running for money.
The first album by British artist Mika was called Life in Cartoon Motion and got him a lot of attention. Hi, I'm Chris Wilson.
I'm J.D. Doyle, and you're listening to Audiophile. And now Mika's eagerly awaited follow-up album is here, and it's called The Boy Who Knew Too Much.
My second album is about feeling comfortable with the fact that I write my kind of pop music, and not apologizing about anything, and in the process, enabling me to drop so many of the complexes that I've had over the past few years. If I'm dancing around in a bedroom on my own for my music video, it's for a reason. Especially if I'm in my underwear, it's for a reason. It's a statement on my part saying, you know what? This is how I got here, and this is how I'm gonna celebrate the fact that I am here.
Like a movie that is ready to the last, coming at you with a double D blast. At the bed of a wounded soldier, in a rush cause he's getting older. Hanging out in the fancy bars with the boys who can play guitar. Listen up cause I've got to warn ya, she's gonna make it out of California. Hey you, what's a good girl like you doing in this crazy world? What's the good gone girl?
You can learn more about the album, The Boy Who Knew Too Much, at www.mikasounds.com. And Mika is spelled M-I-K-A.
The duo Wishing Chair is comprised of Miriam Davidson and Kaya Hartwood, and they mostly describe their sound as folk and roll. Their latest release is called Stand Up 8.
Now I've been taking calls from Paris by the poolside bar. Been standing on a poker table playing this guitar. Be holding all the aces in a company of fools. Be writing all the tickets and then breaking all the rules. Be living in an icebox, yeah, total Arctic cool. But love won't let me.
This marks the fifth time we featured Wishing Chair on Audiophile. And Miriam tells us that the album's title has a philosophical origin.
Stand Up 8 is our eighth CD. It's named after a Japanese proverb, Fall Down 7, Stand Up 8. And it's a good motto for us to work with, just kind of putting our heads down and moving forward. Musically, it's mostly in-house, Kai and I and our bass player Dave, and it sounds like what I hope is our sound, the hip acoustic, soulful, rootsy, passionate. That's what I think of when I think of Wishing Chair.
I don't know a thing about love. I'm just waiting, I'm just waiting, I'm just waiting on a friend of mine. Amazing love, can you feel it? It's up and down.
get more information about the album Stand Up 8 at www.wishingchair.com.
The music of Nick Granato is infused with political and social commentary and also inspiration.
You'll never see love separate or divide. Love does not discriminate, never chooses sides. You can always count on love against all odds. Even when it seems all hope against all hope is gone. Because love is patient, love is kind. True love stands the test of time. When you're down, love will lift you up. No, and love will never leave you stranded, all alone and empty-handed. When you fall, real love never runs. Because that's just what love does.
In Real Life is the name of the latest album by Nick Granato.
In Real Life, the way I see it, is a declaration of life. The album, from beginning to end, is a journey of sorts from my life's perspective, and it touches on everyday issues. I wrote songs to reflect what I felt was important and needed to be said. Hope, compassion, equality, which is very important right now, perseverance, friendship, love, it's all in there. I hope the songs inspire folks to really embrace life and live with a passion, but most importantly, to make a difference.
Stirring up trouble just to be heard. Moving to the front and taking my turn. Standing up to stand out of the crowd. Yeah, that's what I love about living out loud. Cause life's for the living, gotta dance while you can. Leave a dime for the dead, you gotta take another chance. Have some fun, turn it upside down.
Find out more about the album In Real Life at www.nickgranato.com. That's www.nickgranato.com.
That's it for this edition of Audiophile. You can learn more about Audiophile or contact us by visiting our website at www.audiophile.org. That's www.audiofile.org.
Audiophile is produced by Chris Wilson, J.D. Doyle, and Christopher David Trentum. I'm Chris Wilson.
And I'm J.D. Doyle. Keep listening.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, Taryn James, Rick Watts, Rex Walkner with Bill Kelly, Dixie Trichel and John Townsend, Sherry Lund, and J.D. Doyle, Chris Wilson, and Christopher David Trentum contributed program material. Mika, Wishing Chair, and Nick Granato performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is funded by donations from our listeners. Thank you. Please log on to thiswayout.org to support our work, listen to our podcasts, read this week's news wrap, and subscribe to CDs of our programs. To receive our weekly program email alert, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on KCSB Santa Barbara, California, 5CST Southwest Adelaide, South Australia, WTIP Grand Marais, Minnesota, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.